Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey, everyone. This is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's podcast, we're talking about your 14 and 40 Detroit Pistons. Ben Gulker and I talk about the changes made to the starting lineup, the progression Jaden Ivey has made as a scorer and a distributor over the last couple of weeks, what we expect from the Pistons prior to Thursday's trade deadline, spoiler, not that much, and a possible reunion with a high-profile free agent-to-be. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to be following DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing, because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson, pleased, as always, to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. Ben, how's it going?
Hey, Laz, good to be back. A little bye week, middle of the season, pre-All-Star break rest week, I don't know, load management, whatever you call it. Good to be back. Good to be talking with you, man. I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good. We got a lot of stuff to talk about. A lot of things happened in the interim between our two podcasts, which is good. The first thing I wanted to talk about was the change to the starting lineup, which I think is the big ripple effect of everything that's going on this week. So, Ben, we got Jaden Ivey as the sole kind of primary ball handler in the starting lineup. Killian Hayes to the bench. Isaiah Stewart to the bench, sort of. Sadiq Bey into the starting lineup. They seem to have flipped that back. We'll talk about that piece by piece. So, Ben, what were your thoughts when you first saw the starting lineup? And I'll give you like a little hint. My first thought was, oh, they're showcasing Alec Burks prior to the trade deadline.
Yeah, man. So, like, there's a 1A and 1B and a 2 for me, right? So, like...
Not 3? 1A, 1B, 3?
Maybe. There's three things. We can call them 1, 2, 3, 1A, 1B, 3, whatever, however they want. So, like, I agree with you. You're trying to feature Alec Burks for a trade. What you're getting back for him is probably not much, as we've talked to death about, right? So, like, that's the first thing that comes to mind. The second thing that comes to mind is, like, okay, so Dwayne Casey kind of said publicly, and this is thanks to James Edwards III for pointing this out to me on Twitter directly, which I appreciated because I had missed this. Moving Killian to the bench gives the second unit a ball handler, which they had been missing. But to me, this the subtext of that almost feels like you want to give Jaden Ivey more ball handling in the first unit, which I think has almost become the obvious benefit of moving Killian to the bench, right? So that's like the 1A, 1B, right? Or 2A, 2B, whatever you want to call it. So those are the three things I can think of. But like my obviously reaction, like my gut reaction was, oh man, this sucks for Killian. Like that was my honest reaction.
Really?
That's how I felt about it. Yeah.
So that's interesting to me because I thought it's like, okay, Sean Corp wrote a great piece about how like that move kind of signaled the thing that mattered this season was getting Ivy more ball handler reps. And the best way to do that was to split up the two ball handlers they had in the starting lineup. The other thing I thought about was Killian Hayes' like real role for this team moving forward is not going to be as a starter. It's going to be off the bench. And so him re-having that role, getting more used to that role, however you want to put it, being in the role he's supposed to be in, I don't think is a bad thing. It is clear to me that Killian is has not been playing well since that role change. He couldn't, like this week, he had a 3-for-16 game against Dallas that had nothing to do with whether or not he was coming off the bench. Those shots just like weren't falling that night. And then with the last two games, he couldn't deal with ball pressure in the backcourt from like Dennis Smith Jr. and Saben Lee, which is not a good sign.
Not a good sign.
Yeah. Not exactly the NBA's most elite defenders there.
Two former Pistons, too, by the way.
As well,
Which is interesting.
Yeah. But it was just not a very good week from Killian. And offensively, even without the ball pressure, like the way I put it in the notes is like a quarterback who misses his tight end when it's tight end gets hurt. Yeah. He misses Boyan. He misses Boyan a lot as like just somebody who like keeps the ball moving, knows what he's doing when he comes off these pin downs and these flares that the Pistons are running. When he gets the ball to Sadiq, they're much more likely to get like an isolation possession. We're going to talk about Sadiq later. But yeah, this move has not been great for Killian, but Killian also has to do himself more of a service coming off the bench.
Yeah, I mean, clearly it's impacted Killian's, like his body language to me was mm-hmm. real bad. In the last two games, I think in particular the Charlotte game, it stood out to me even in the win. You know, losing the ball in the backcourt, you mentioned that just, it was inexcusable.
Him and Livers have like flubbed handoffs like two games in a row. It's been weird.
It almost looks to me like he's so disappointed in what's happened in his play and in his demotion that it's impacted his focus and his effort. And that, I know he's a young player, but he's got to be a professional and rise above it. Like you look at the way Sadiq and Stu have handled it, they've handled it so well. You contrast that with the way Killian has handled it, and it's just night and day, right? He's just got to be better in terms of how he handles it. Like you missing shots, that's going to happen. Losing the ball in the backcourt because you just flubbed the pass, like, you can't do that as a point guard. So, you know, here's the thing. We'll talk about Jaden Ivey a little bit more. I think one of the things that's interesting, you know, Jaden has been surging of late. Killian has been slumping of late. It's interesting to me that both of those guys seem to need the basketball, right? They're both ball handlers. When Jaden has been playing well, it's because he's had the ball, making decisions. When Killian has played the best, it's because he's had the ball a lot and he's been making decisions. And look, it's not close. Jaden's ceiling is just way higher, right? So prioritizing Jaden Ivey just make more sense. And it's a meritocracy. And unfortunately for Killian, he's just not as good. So he gets demoted. You're exactly correct. His role is on the bench because he's not as good as Jaden Ivey. And he's not as good as Cade Cunningham. And so he's got to embrace and accept that. And it's not just going to be on the Pistons, right? I mean, if he's going to stick in the NBA anywhere, there are very few starting guards, if any, that he would be able to outplay, right? So harsh reality sets in for Killian Hayes, I think, unfortunately.
No, absolutely. And we're going to do like a whole section on Jaden Ivey. We got a whole thing on Jaden Ivey planned. I wanted to talk a lot about Jaden Ivey this week. So with the second part of that starting lineup change was the flip-flop between Sadiq Bey and Isaiah Stewart. We have seen the return of the dog pound in the last couple of games with the two big lineup. But Sadiq has, for his part, has been heating up month by month. Sadiq's three-point percentage in November was 23%. That's bad. In December, it was 38%. That's good. In January, it was 39.5%. That's pretty good. And in two February games so far, he's shooting 43.8% from three. And so I think Sadiq is officially heating up from downtown, which has been the main thing we've asked from him as a player. And that's been, you know, regardless of role, you're starting for a little bit. He's back off the bench. His role has been going back and forth, but the consistency with the shot has been there over the course of over 2 months now at this point. Unfortunately, that November was so bad that he's not quite yet at 35%, but he's gonna get there. probably sometime later this week. Ben, Sadiq Bey finding a shot, no matter what the role, great thing for the Pistons, probably keeps him on this team past the trade deadline.
Yeah, what a bizarre season for Sadiq. What a roller coaster. Well, it's like the roller coaster on the ascent the whole season, I guess. Right? Like, hopefully it doesn't go back down, I guess. Yeah, I mean, he's kind of been like quietly an unsung hero that we haven't, I don't think a lot of people have talked about, right? Like, he's just kind of been solidly productive in really weird and unexpected ways, right? Like, he's managed to score the ball relatively efficiently when his shot wasn't falling from deep. He was able to kind of bully ball his way into the paint and score, get to the free throw line and score that way. He's had some real big games of late that have contributed to some important wins, knocking down some threes, as you've mentioned. I say this every time we talk about Sadiq. I just don't know who he is yet, because it just changes every time we talk about him. Every month, it's like it's a different slash line because it just keeps changing, right? You know, the thing I keep thinking about Sadiq though is like, is he the prototypical like second unit kind of guy though, right? Like, and that seems to be the role he's slotting himself into. I think that would be fine. I think that would be okay. But it limits your core ceiling, I guess, a little bit if that's who Sadiq is. So
I think the bench role for him is good. If he continues like to be able to hit these threes at this rate, it makes him a non-traditional bench scorer, right? Like, normally when we think of bench scorer, we're thinking of guys like Alec Burks, guys who can create their own shot, get all the way to the rim. And they look a lot more fluid than Sadiq does doing it. But if Sadiq is able to continue to contribute offensively, like at this in this way, but also remains as a like stuck between positions as he is defensively, then that makes him really tough to start, but it makes him very useful as like a role player off the bench. Absolutely. I think the Pistons are looking for someone who gives them a little bit more defensively than Sadiq does at this point. Sadiq obviously could always make improvements on that end, right? Still, you know, still a young player. This is his third year, but I don't think you can trust him as a long-term starter unless he's like really going to be making those improvements defensively. But the consistency offensively that we've seen over the last couple of months makes him impossible to like give up in a trade. So I think that's where we're at with Sadiq right now. He's just a very non-traditional bench scorer, and like that's a solid role for a guy taken where he was taken in the draft. It's been a weird season for Sadiq. Isaiah Stewart back in the starting lineup now. We're return to the dog pound. He had looked more useful as a big wing than a big, especially in the Dallas game. This was really crystallized. He had some real struggles around the rim and in the paint as a finisher. His hands are still really bad as a post player. But as a wing, we saw him, you know, attacking some closeout. He had a really nice dunk in the Charlotte game all over Mason Plumlee. That was nice. And with the 3-for-8 he shot from three in Phoenix, I was like, maybe that's the return of his three-point shot. Yeah. He had not made a three since January 6th prior to that Phoenix game. So basically a month in between three-point makes, which is kind of rough. But Ben, I think we both value what Stewart has been able to bring as a rebounder, as a defender, as an energy guy, enough to continue to want to see him play in that starting lineup next to Jalen Duren.
Yeah, I agree. I think too, Isaiah Stewart is still so incredibly young. Don't let that fall off your radar. He's still so incredibly young. What we've seen off the dribble when the 3-point shot is respected is interesting. It's not always pretty. It's not always effective, but that it exists at all is, I think, something to be intrigued by because he's only 21 years old. And, you know, the 3-point shot is still new, as we've talked about before. It's still a work in progress. And, you know, like, for example, I think people are are very willing to be patient with a guy like Jaden Ivey and his turnovers and his mistakes, I think it's fair to extend a little bit of grace to a guy like Isaiah Stewart as well, as he makes some of the similar kinds of mistakes. He just doesn't have the ceiling that Jaden Ivey has, right? But to me, the rest of the season, if Jaden Ivey exploring his offensive game is priority one, then like 1A is like Jalen Duren. And then how does Isaiah Stewart mix in with Jalen Duren is right there for me. Is he Jalen Duren's backup, or is there some way to play them together for extended minutes? And I think you really need to explore that possibility. I think it's a coin flip for me which way it pans out. I think I'm comfortable with Stewart coming off the bench and being a backup five. I think he's capable of doing that. Whether or not he's capable of being a starting four in the NBA is the question that they got to keep exploring.
Yeah, 6 assists for Stewart against Charlotte was really noticeable, as a guy who was just like making plays going downhill. Some of those were to Duren. Some of those were to corner shooters, which was impressive. It does not help that Charlotte, I think, has the, like, both times we've played Charlotte this year, I've been like, wow, their defense is worse than ours, which is like not a good place to be. And, you know, obviously he didn't make those similar types of plays against Phoenix or against Dallas earlier this week. But I do agree with you, Ben, that like figuring out the Stewart Duren pairing as like, is this a thing that's going to be part of our like long-term efforts? Like we like Stewart. We think Stewart's going to be here long-term. We just don't know if that's a backup center or as you're starting four. And I think I just continue to be intrigued by like the there that's there with Isaiah Stewart. The plays he's being able to make off the dribble, attacking closeouts, the shot returning would be really nice so he can get those closeouts, especially since teams aren't respecting the shot. He's going to get as many open shots as he can manage. And you could even see, like when I was looking at his box scores to like see when the last time he hit a three was, you could see like it's like 0 for 2, 0 for 1, 0 for 2. Like he had stopped shooting them pretty much.
Right.
And so this Phoenix game was the first time I think he had taken like over 5 threes in that stretch. And so it's going to be really important for him to just keep shooting. It's like the worst thing that can happen is that you stop and then all of a sudden you're back to the like previous year's versions of Isaiah Stewart where we weren't exactly sure what you offered offensively, and like that was a big problem with the spacing, especially like around a Cade Cunningham. But yeah, I'm really intrigued by Isaiah Stewart. I didn't put a Jalen Duren segment in here. I probably should have. I'm gonna be thinking about that Jalen Duren short roll pass to the corner to Sadiq
for the game. Sealed the game. Yeah,
that was a great play. Duren had a rough game against Phoenix, but yeah, Jalen Duren is very much a part of this team's core, and so figuring out what kind of player you need to put next to him and Jaden Ivey and Cade Cunningham is going to be really important, whether or not that's Isaiah Stewart or somebody else. But yeah, let's talk about Jaden Ivey. This is the focused Jaden Ivey segment. Ben, I've been very vocal about my desire to trade Jaden Ivey and turn Jaden Ivey like into a 3-and-D wing, into an OG and an OB, into like a Mikal Bridges type. And a lot of people have pushed back on me saying like, hey, like this kid's going to be special. This is not the time to give up on him. And it's like, yeah, I see where people are coming from. He's made very legitimate strides over the last month or so. And especially since the Burks-Killian swap in the starting lineup, like you talked about a little bit earlier, you can see the comfort level with the ball in his hands is like really risen. He's made strides in his ability to diversify his offensive attack, right? He's no longer just like, I'm shooting a three or I'm going to the rim. Like those are not his only two options anymore. He's got a little bit more patience in the mid range. He's got a mid range jumper he's been able to pull out. He's got floaters. He's taking fewer threes, which I think we're going to talk about a little bit later. He's also made some nice strides as a playmaker. He seems to be the only person on the team who can find Jalen Duren open underneath the rim for dunks, which is weird. There have been a lot of times over the last like 3 weeks I've said like, was that Jaden Ivey's best game of the season? But like, despite those strides being made and they are real, he's still having trouble with his efficiency. He's still hovering in like the low 70s, high 60s as a free throw shooter, which is really a big thing because like he's going, if as much as he gets fouled, like he could make a living at the line if he was shooting like 80% instead of the 69% he's shooting over the last 15 games.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
I'm going to do the double dip as well. He leads all rookies in assists per game and total. Like, that's great. He also leads all rookies in turnovers. That's less great. He's shooting 33% from three on the season, which is a little bit higher than I think it's been. But yeah, Ben, Jaden Ivey is learning. And I think like we can see that learning process happening in front of our eyes. And I wanted to acknowledge it so people don't think that like I'm just like completely biased against Jaden Ivey. Like, no, I see it happening. I see the process happening. But I also see like the missed free throws are a killer, especially for in terms of efficiency.
Yeah, I mean, I think you're absolutely right. I would say that I think his performance against Charlotte was probably his most mature performance as a pro. That's how I would describe it. I mean, I watch pretty carefully for those possessions that, to me, where he's off the dribble and he leaves his feet and gets into no man's land, right? He's in the air with the basketball and with nowhere to go. And I can only think of one of those. Like, I watched from and only saw one. You know, those lead to turnovers, and those are terrible. They're the worst sorts of turnovers as well. Those, I think, are probably decreasing over time. You know, hard to quantify, but that's just kind of what my eyeballs are telling me. I think if you watch critically, you'll probably see he still puts his teammates in bad positions off the pass. Like he still needs to get bailed out, right? Like he drives and gets himself in a bad position and he needs to bail out. I can think of a possession where, you know, he's driving with 6 seconds left. He gets in a bad spot. He doesn't leave his feet, but he still ends up, you know, passing the ball to a covered Isaiah Stewart with 4 seconds left on the shot clock. That, as an NBA guard, that's not a thing you should be doing, right? Like you don't kick it to Isaiah Stewart on the 3-point line when Isaiah Stewart is covered with 3 or 4 seconds on the shot clock, right? You have to understand, and that comes with time, but that's a next step in the learning. That's just not how you want to end a possession. But that kind of stuff, I think, arguably is happening less. So that's, I think, the growth that you're talking about. It doesn't show up in the stat sheet, right? It's not an assist and it's not a turnover. Right. So that's a net positive. It helps the team overall. I think also a shot chart has looked pretty solid. I shared this on Twitter. His 3-point shooting has been up while his attempts have been down. So like his free throw percentage has been solid, or excuse me, his 3-point percentage has been solid while the attempts have been a little bit lower. I think that's probably a good thing. And then I think maybe an interesting barometer for Jaden. You look at his free throw rate. He's had more. Like there's actually a free throw rate number. You can check NBA.com or Basketball Reference for this. But you can also just look at how many free throw attempts does he have versus 3-point attempts does he have. So he's taken more free throws than he has threes over the past month. And I think that's a good thing, right? So he's attacking the rim and getting fouled. So his free throw rate has actually ticked up to higher than Bogey's actually, which is, I think, a good thing because that had plummeted down a little bit, which to me is a sign of passivity. So he wasn't actually getting all the way to the rim and getting fouled, I think, for a time where he had maybe hit the rookie wall. So like all that stuff is positive stuff for Jaden Ivey. You know, all the other stuff we've talked about with Jaden is going to take time. Shooting efficiency is not going to come in the middle of a season for a rookie guard who's never been a good shooter. That's a long game for Jaden Ivey. Developing a mid-range jumper for a guy who's not naturally a shooter, that's a long game for Jaden Ivey. Free throw shooting, though, like that absolutely has to get better, especially if he's going to be a guy who lives off the dribble. I mean, a 71% free throw shoot, that's just not going to cut it. He's got to get better. He will not get to his potential if he's not a 75, 78, 80% free throw shooter. That's just, It's not even close to good enough. So that's absolutely got to be a focal point for his development over the summer. You know, I always get reluctant about tinkering with mechanics, but I do not like his mechanics at all. I think his shot, it's slow. It's low. It starts.
He shoots it from his chest.
Yeah. He shoots it from his chest. And it's a slow release. Everything about the release is too low and slow. And it, if you're going to talk about a pull-up jump shot, like, fortunately he's fast and quick enough that he creates separation just because of that. But a pull-up jumper, like, you look at the great pull-up jumpers in the NBA right now, the Durants, the Bookers, guys like that, quick releases that are high, right? And Jaden doesn't have that. So those are the things long-term he's going to work on if he's going to be a dynamic scorer in the NBA. But I think you're right, Laz. There are things that are happening to be positive about. Like you, I'm not as high on Jaden as a lot of people, although I certainly see the case that people are making about his long-term potential. But at the same time, absolutely fair to say over the past month, there are legitimate, real, tangible signs of growth. And it's fair to point that out for sure. He deserves credit for the progress he's been making.
I will say when I looked up the numbers prior to the Phoenix game, like, he was doing better from the line. He shot, like, I think 1-for-5 in the Phoenix game, and that, like, that took his numbers basically from, like, above 70% in the last 15 games to below 70% in the last 15 games. And so, like, okay, take out that one game or whatever, like, he's performing better from the free throw line. Still not in the 80s like you would like to see, but, like, better from the free throw line, especially for a guy who's going to get to the free throw line as much as he is. I think you're right in that we've seen a lot less passivity from him. The more free throws than threes is a great barometer. I think that, especially, like we talked about, his shot form, especially for someone who should, like, really only be shooting threes when he's wide open, I think not taking like 5, 6, 7 threes a game is probably going to be really good for Jaden Ivey's efficiency. I think, like, 3.5, like, 4 is, like, probably, like, the right amount of threes for him to be taking per game. But I do just want to point out the playmaking as well. Like, yes, he has still throws grenades to Isaiah Stewart. But
that's a good way to put it.
Yeah. But, like, the connection that he and Jalen Duren have had over the last, like, 10 or so games is something that's been really impressive. Like, that's the stuff I was hoping we would get to see from Cade this season, right? Is like that progression, that dynamic duo, like, ness of having a big pick and roll, like, lob threat or slip threat, as the case may be. Jalen's also being able to leverage his speed to create, like, gaps in the defense. We talked about that game sealing three by Sadiq Bey against Charlotte. It's like half of that play is made because Jaden Ivey is past Terry Rozier so much so that, like, PJ Washington has to crash in on Jalen Duren and be all the way in the paint on the help. And, like, that's why Jalen Duren's able to skip the ball to the corner. But it's because Jaden Ivey created that initial advantage at the point of attack because of his athleticism, because of his quickness.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's fair.
You also, like, I don't know, I'm just, the mid-range is going to come. I think it's weird because teams will be forced to, like, the mid-range jumper is a shot that teams want you to take. They will leave Jaden Ivey open to take mid-range jumpers. He's made a good enough amount of them over this last stretch that, like, I no longer feel like a Jaden Ivey mid-range shot is, like, a complete win for the defense, but I also don't want him to get too comfortable operating in that mid-range paint area. The other thing I'll say is that you can see him developing a level of variety of speed. Like, you can see him going from slow to fast and fast to slow in the pick and roll, and how that ability to go fast, to go, like, 0-60 underneath the free throw line really impacts defenses, right? Like, bigs have real trouble kind of closing that last, like, 5 feet of space if he's, like, you know, snaking the pick and roll or something like that. The next thing I think for he and Duren to do will be experiment a little bit with some of those highway screens we saw from Stewart last season. If Duren ever gets proficient at, like, sealing his man and Ivy's just able to like jet down the lane from 15 feet and in, like that will be easy instant offense whenever the Pistons can get it. But yeah, Jaden Ivey's been really good over the last month. I really wanted to slow down and acknowledge that and just say that as well. Speaking of Ivy and Duren as well, they both of those guys were named to the Rookie Stars or the Rising Stars Rookie Challenge. Cade being in the Rising Stars Rookie Challenge was a nice like little fun thing that happened last year. Sad we don't get to see that again. This doesn't like really matter, but it's cool, right, Ben?
Yeah, I mean, they're going to fit right in. A game with no defense being played. They're going to be right at home.
Oh, no.
Sorry, I couldn't resist. No, it'll be fun. I'm glad for both of them in all seriousness. I had to be a little sarcastic.
Yeah.
Hopefully we get to see both of them run and dunk. I mean, it's a game that's built for both of those guys, right? Like, crazy athletic. Jaden in particular, like, with his speed. Like, seriously, in a game with no defense being played, like, oh my goodness, he should have a field day. Duren, I mean, there's going to be other capable passers in that game who are going to love playing with Duren. So, should be some fun highlights for both of them, I would think. And I would not be surprised to see Jaden Ivey rack up a significant amount of points. I would not be at all surprised.
Yeah. I joked on Twitter that it's Jalen Duren's destiny to win Rising Stars MVP, grabbing like 800 rebounds. Just like no one's boxing out. He's just like elevating right over everybody. But in all seriousness, one aspect of that I did like is what Dwayne Casey told the media that he told those guys was that like really go in there and experience the all-star experience, even though they are not all-stars. Because they want to make the All-Star game and we want them to make the All-Star game. So, you know, go in, like, see what those guys are doing, see what it takes to be an All-Star, like, get that taste so that you get the hunger, like, in order to make yourself better to be an All-Star. I thought that was a really important bit of coaching from Dwayne Casey and part of the reason why, like, he's still here. All right, Ben, we're going to shift gears a little bit. This is the last week before the trade deadline. The trade deadline is Thursday. We've talked a lot over the last like three or so weeks about potential moves the Pistons could make at the trade deadline. We are not going to rehash a lot of that. People should go listen to our previous podcast to get, especially since there's like no new news on those fronts, right? The Pistons want a lot for Bojan Bogdanović. They want less, but still a lot for Alec Burks. And Nerlens Noel is probably going somewhere else. Like that, that's it. You're done. We did get a little bit of new intel, though. Denver's Bones Highland is being shopped by the Nuggets. I needed to be reminded of this. I did not remember this. Apparently, Troy Weaver was a big fan of Bones Highland in the pre-draft process. That was the Cade Cunningham year when they took Livers with that second-round pick, but Bones was drafted before Livers. Any interest in Bones Highland as a easy acquisition, like a low cost, like no one's giving you a first round pick for Bones, but as a low cost acquisition, Ben.
Yeah, I mean, Weaver seems to like guys I wouldn't think twice about, so I guess this sort of like fits, like it fits that. I don't know, Laz, you're gonna have to tell me why. Like, he's a okay 3-point shooter, right? I was looking at the shot chart and the stats, about half his threes are assisted, decent percentage. I don't watch a lot of Nuggets games, right? Other than the highlights, because Jokic is just ungodly and Murray is healthy right now. And they're just like the highlight reels are absurd, but I don't stay up late to watch the Nuggets play a lot. So tell me why I should be interested in a guy who's on a good team, playing a decent amount of minutes off the bench, right? But like 2-point percentage is terrible, but 3-point percentage is okay. Why should I want this to happen?
He's a microwave scorer, right? And I think I saw Ku Cahill of Locked On Pistons come up with this first. Is you could do like a Bones for Killian swap in a admission that Killian is probably not going to be as effective as you thought he was going to be when you drafted him seventh. But Killian as a guy who plays defense and keeps the ball moving on that Denver team would be really valuable for them. in the way that a microwave score kind of isn't. They don't really need a microwave score who doesn't play defense, and that's kind of what Bones is right now.
That's interesting.
I think of Bones as like a younger Alec Burks, right? It's like, would you like to get your hands on Alec Burks at 22 and perhaps like help him, you know, get some more pick and roll reps so that he becomes a more efficient 2-point scorer? We've talked a lot of this season about how the bench has missed another ball handler. We just talked about how they split up Killian and Jaden to get more ball handling onto the second unit. Bones Highland can definitely do that. But yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if it's not like mandatory. No one out. If they miss on Bones Highland, it's not like some big miss. But I thought that might be an interesting pickup for a Pistons team that has like struggled with shot creation at times this season. Yeah. The other trade deadline free agency, you know, roster change thing I wanted to bring up was that we've heard this like a couple times now. Jeremy Grant has not signed the extension that Portland offered him. He's looking for a big payday in free agency. We got a little slight note from James Edwards III at The Athletic that there is a possibility of a Jeremy Grant Troy Weaver reunion in Detroit. Ben is shaking his head and his lips are pursed. He's not a fan of Jeremy Grant coming back to Detroit. Why is that, Ben?
Jeremy Grant is fine. He's a fine player. But, like, why?
They need defense. They need a 3-and-D wing. And
they
that's
do.
Kinda what he
but,
is.
Like, we did this once. And, like, it was not good. I mean, it was fine. I mean, he's fine. He's a fine player. Like, he's a fine player. It's fine. He's a fine player.
Cade, Jaden Ivey, Jeremy Grant, Isaiah Stewart, Jalen Duren, or, you know, throw in Bogey instead. Throwing in Bogey, it, like, brings you a lot of the same problems you had when, like, Jeremy and Sadiq were in the starting lineup together, where it's like Jeremy guards one guy, but he can't guard everybody. I don't know. I think Jeremy and Cade had, like, really figured out how to play well with each other by the end of last season. That chemistry was burgeoning. The Pistons do need a guy to guard the Kevin Durant's and Lauri Markkanen's and the Luka Doncic's. Luka destroyed the Pistons.
Luka destroys everybody.
That is totally fair. But the Pistons currently don't have like that on-ball 6'7", 6'8", 6'9" guy who can defend. And Jeremy Grant can do that. You know, do I want to give Jeremy Grant the like $35 million or whatever that he's going to be asking for? Like, yeah, probably not. Yeah, probably not. But it's on the table.
Yeah, like, okay, so Cade and Jaden are going to command or expect post-rookie max deals, right?
Probably Cade more so than Jaden.
Cade for sure.
If I remember, like, you can only have one like designated post rookie max guy on your roster. This is why Minnesota couldn't trade for Ben Simmons, because like him and Kat both have post rookie maxes or something. So,
or the post rookie, they're going to both. Okay. Let's just say
they're both going to make a bunch of money.
Big deals, right?
Yeah,
big deals, right? Okay. Yeah, so, yeah. And they're both going to get big paydays before they're at their peak. Right, performance wise, right?
True.
So they're not going to be at their best before they're getting paid their big extensions. You've got decisions to make about Duren when he's like what, 23?
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. That's good. Isaiah Stewart's going to be same age ish.
Yeah. Yeah.
24.
Something like that.
Okay. Sadiq is your bench guy, presumably. He's going to be a little bit older. And you're going to lock potentially Jeremy Grant. How old is Jeremy now? 27? Something like that? 28? I mean, I guess. And Bogey is 35, 33, something like that, 32.
Bogey's 33 right now, if I remember correctly.
I mean, I mean, I don't know. I think if you sign Jeremy Grant, I don't know what you're doing with Bogey. You trade Bogey. I don't know why you have both of those guys. It's redundancies. I don't know. That's it just fair. Seems like you're locking yourself into a big bunch of meh. Like, you're fine. I mean, you're okay.
I don't even disagree with you. But then, like, I'm looking at the $30 million they have in cap space this offseason and being like, what are they going to do with that?
Yeah, that's
and we too. And we know they want to be competitive next season. It's like, and the way that they're going to do that is being better defensively than they are right now. It's like, do you want to spend $35 billion on Jeremy Grant, or do you want to spend $35 million on Kyle Kuzma? Right? Like,
those, oh God, no!
Like, remember we did the list of wing guys like 2 weeks ago. It's like, all right, you want $15 million on Grant Williams? Like, okay, maybe. It's like $30 million on Kuzma. It's like, oh God, I hate it. But like, is that what it costs? No easy decisions in roster building. Absolutely, especially with a team that has such clearly defined holes but like the things that they're missing are the things that literally every team in the NBA wants. So it's kind of a problem.
I mean, they need to win the lottery or get the second pick. That's like, yeah. That's basically what needs to happen.
28%.
Right.
Oh man. All right, Ben, this is your time to shine. What have you been thinking about for these last couple weeks as you watch our Detroit Pistons?
Well, it's an interesting segue, right? So Pistons want to push for the play-in in a year, right?
In a year, next year.
Currently, they have 14 wins. The only team that has fewer wins is the Rockets with 13. Spurs also lost to? Have.
What's terribly. That? Who they lost to terribly.
Correct. Well, terribly, but also I'd rather beat the Brooklyns and lose to the Houstons, to be perfectly honest. Like, that's not bad. It's not. It sucks, but like, okay.
Yeah.
Looking at the Eastern Conference right now, the teams chasing the play-in have like 24 to 25 wins, right? There's that glut of teams, Chicago, Indiana, Washington, Toronto. They all suck, but they're all losing teams. They all have 24 to 25 wins, right? A little bit of math. To get to that, you have to multiply the Pistons' win total by 1.8, right? You have to add 11 wins to 14 to get to that. Not quite double your wins, but pretty darn close, right? So you add Cade Cunningham, you add Marvin Bagley, you add a high draft pick, and you add Jeremy Grant or equivalent. Does that double your win total? I don't know. I'm really curious to see how Troy Weaver gets this squad of guys to 25 wins 12 months from now. I think it's going to take a lot of work. It's not impossible. It's certainly not impossible, but I think Weaver's got a lot of work to do. And they have a lot. They're going to have to make some big strides internally. Because going from 14 wins to 25 wins over 12 months, I mean, adding 11 wins to your win total is a tall order.
All right.
So yeah, that's what I'm thinking about.
If they need 11 wins, how many would healthy Cade be worth?
Hard to say.
Is it 3? Is it 8? That is the big question to me, because it's clear that this team would be better with Cade. It's unclear to me like how much better. Like I was thinking about this in terms of like the status of the other teams who are rebuilding, right? Like Orlando has 21 wins and a rock solid core between Paulo Franz and like Wendell Carter Jr. I think is their third guy. And they have like a stable of like other potential guys that they like. Right. Mm-hmm. And they, because of Paulo, because of Franz, because they nailed those picks in back-to-back years, their rebuild looks much, much better and much, much further along than the Pistons does right now. Like Indiana is, they do suck, but between Halliburton and extending Miles Turner and like, you know, finding stuff in Buddy Hield and others, like they have positioned themselves to where like, okay, like they are, I don't know if they'll make the play in, but they've put themselves in that category. Mm-hmm. Like, does a healthy Cade and a Kyle Kuzma like put you into like 21 win territory? Like, maybe. But you're also at this point, you're running into the thing we talked about earlier, which is like your team is expensive and is going to get more expensive in the not too distant future. Like, have you locked yourself into something that's not going to be great long term? So yeah, no, I don't disagree that I personally think this is probably like a 16, 17, 18 win team with Cade. Like, they're not like they win some of those close games that they've been in at the end where they've like kind of thrown up on themselves. But and Cade helps with that. And at this point, if Cade's healthy, we're talking about like the burgeoning chemistry between him and Jalen Duren, right? We're talking about how him and Ivy are learning to play together and how Ivy's figuring stuff out and that's making Cade's life easier. But that still doesn't fix the issues they have defensively. It still probably doesn't fix the issues they have offensively from an efficiency standpoint. We're probably complaining about how Cade's not getting any calls and wondering why he's not shooting better from three, right? And so this team is not like Cade doesn't make this team 11 wins better by himself, but right. How much he adds in terms of wins and losses, I think is a really big question that needs to be answered. And if you're going to think about like how this team makes that jump into that 24, 25, 26 win range at this point in the season.
Yeah. And what is a healthy Cade Cunningham? That's the question. Like, Cade is talking about having pain in his shin since high school. Like, that to me, like, what does a healthy Cade Cunningham even look like is an interesting question to me. Because there's this hope in me that Cade Cunningham comes out in year three and looks like a different player offensively and potentially even defensively. I mean, you talked about defensively. I'm a little scared of the Cade Ivy backcourt right now because they, especially the way Ivy has played defensively, but you know, there's potential that this injury has really negatively impacted Cade and his ability to move and his ability to be explosive. And maybe this is transformative for the way he plays. So I don't know. I don't know those answers. So I'm asking the question in a very critical way. How do you get from 14 wins to 25 wins? Because that's the type of leap that Troy Weaver is talking about. And it's not, I'm just saying, it's not an easy leap to make.
Yeah.
And $30 million in cap space and a high draft pick is just, it's no guarantee. Like, there's a lot of hard work that needs to happen to get there.
No, I agree. And then to add to that even, right? Like, okay, it's like next year you want to be in the 24, 25, 26 win range. Like, how do you turn that into 2 years from now, the 30, 32 win range, right? Where like you are competing with your, you know, the Milwaukees and the Bostons and the, I don't know. By in 2 years from now, James Harden might be like 300 pounds. So who knows what's going to be up there? But yeah, like Cleveland will be on the rise at that point.
Correct.
Right? Like Orlando, yeah. Like you will be up against whatever Orlando is doing when they're on a very similar track. And so like making those next couple of jumps is going to be very, it's going to be interesting to see how the Pistons handle that over the next couple of years. Absolutely. Speaking of just the high-level teams, the Pistons play the Boston at home on Monday. They play Cleveland on the road on Wednesday. And then they play San Antonio at home on Friday. They probably really need to win that one. That seems like a nice game. And then they play the Toronto on the road on a Sunday matinee. And after the trade deadline, that could be like a completely different Toronto team. Like, yeah. Who knows who's on that Toronto team on Sunday. But yeah, Ben, the Pistons probably really need that San Antonio home game.
Yeah, and I tell you what, I would also take the weird random win against a good team and a loss to San Antonio too. I would take that. Tell you what,
is Toronto a good team? Does that count?
They're better than the Pistons, so
yeah, that's true.
But maybe they will be. But I mean, maybe they will be. Who knows what they're going to trade? I mean, if they trade OG, who see? You know, maybe they'll flip him into something that fits better. I don't know.
They could trade OG. They could trade Fred VanVleet.
Yeah, that's true.
They could trade Ken Burch. Like, I don't know, man.
I don't think I believe in Toronto much, regardless. But yeah, this is Celtics and the Cavs. Both tough matchups for Detroit. I mean, we'll see. Maybe they'll rest guys, and it won't be as tough. But San Antonio, please. Yeah, I mean, please. Yeah. It would be nice to watch a win.
Orlando, by the way, has beaten the Celtics three times this year, and it's gotten to the point where like the Celtics broadcast is like, "Why can't we beat these guys? Like, what are these guys doing to us?"
That's funny.
I watched that game. That's very funny. Paolo, very good. Very, yeah. Very impressed by Paolo. Looks good, like a stud already.
Yeah.
All right, Ben. That's a, that we talked about a lot of stuff. I was like, we didn't talk last week, so I guess we had a lot of stuff to talk about. But yeah. You know, despite the fact that this is a 13-win team with the skeleton of what we hope is a 24-win team at this time next year, this is an interesting team. It's a lot of things are happening. Let the people know where they can find you, where they can find what your thoughts are on this interesting team as we move towards the trade deadline and the end of this season.
Well, lately I've managed to put my thoughts on Twitter at BR Golker. Saturday morning seems to be my time where I'm catching up on the Pistons recordings that I missed during the week, which has kind of been funny. So whatever game I don't watch during the week, I usually watch Saturday mornings early before my kids get up and I launch into my Twitter threads and rants. So that's a good time. Otherwise, at DetroitBadBoys.com. Appreciate the support of the podcast over the years. And, hit us up in the comments. Let us know what you'd like to talk about in the next couple of weeks.
Your kids don't wake up at like 7?
Yeah, I kind of ignore them though, you know.
Oh, okay.
For a little while. My wife gives me Saturday mornings to do my Piston stuff, which is wonderful. And sometimes they even watch the games for a few minutes with me, which is nice. So
I watched all of the we went to a 3-year-old's birthday party last night. And so I did not watch the Phoenix game. I watched the Phoenix game this morning. And it was nice because during the first quarter, he was like, ball, ball. Nice. I was like, yes. Yeah. It's like they're playing basketball. Yeah. And then he's like, all these railroad tracks you brought? Yeah, I'm just going to dump them on the floor now. Yeah. It's like, okay, well, we'll get through them. Anyway, he gets up at 7, bright and early, no matter what. So I got to watch these games live at night when they happen. And you can find me live tweeting these games when they happen at night as they happen. On Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. I've also tried to wander into the comments of our recaps and the podcast. Let people know that I don't hate Jaden Ivey as much as they think I do. And just giving people what they want to hear with this Pistons team so far this year. Thank you all for listening. We do appreciate the support of the podcast. It means the world to us. As we think about what the future of this podcast is going to look like. But we appreciate the support you guys have given us over the years and this season. It means the world to us. Thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you all next week. See you.